When we left off in episode one, Fred Hoiberg had just been hired as the 19th coach in the history of Iowa State basketball. The reaction to Jamie Pollard's decision to bring back the mayor was mixed. We heard from national pundits like Jeff Goodman. Then he worked for ESPN, and he had serious doubts. Locally, fans and the media, too, were skeptical but hopeful this thing could work. Hoiberg had never coached before. Could his days as an NBA player and time spent in the front office of the Minnesota Timberwolves translate to coaching success at the high major level? Hoiberg and his staff had no choice but to think outside the box. This is episode two of Transfer U.
CF Chronicles, Cyclone Fanatic Media's new podcast series, presents Transfer U, the story behind the story of the greatest era in the history of Iowa State basketball. It's how Fred Hoiberg changed the sport of college basketball and the characters behind it. Transfer U is brought to you by you, Cyclone Fanatic Patreon members. Your monthly donations to Cyclone Fanatic go right back into making our product great. If you enjoy our content, please consider donating monthly today.
In the spring of 2010, Fred Hoiberg and his staff, well, they were faced with a tough chore that was rebuilding the struggling Iowa State basketball program. To make things worse, there were only three scholarship players. That's Deontay Garrett, Jamie Vanderbeeken, and Scott Christofferson that were coming back from that disappointing 2009-2010 team that went 4-12 in the Big 12. You know, one thing I always wondered about the decision to take so many transfers immediately, and that was five over the span of 4 months, to be specific, was what were the higher-ups at Iowa State thinking? Athletics director Jamie Pollard says, well, this was discussed before Hoiberg had even accepted the position.
Well, it started when we sat in his living room in Minnesota and talked about, you know, what's his vision for the job, and how he articulated it was the only way we can win at Iowa State is we've got to have the same talent level as KU, but we can't get that talent level right out of high school because we don't have the tradition. And so he asked me, are you going to be okay if I want to pursue that kind of talent level, but to get it on the rebound, so to speak, through transfers? And I said I was supportive of that. You know, we would need to vet the transfers if they were to make sure they're the right ones. What I specifically remember is Royce White was the first one. And I remember thinking and saying to Fred, are you sure you want Royce White to be your first one? but, you know, we had a resource on campus, Vice President Tom Hill. Tom was, you know, his son played at Duke. Wasn't Grant Hill, but it was Thomas Hill.
Okay.
And
I didn't know that.
Tom had worked in the athletics department at Oklahoma back when Barry Switzer was there, and then had moved into student affairs at Florida, and then had been at Iowa State for a long time. And Tom Hill was a really good resource in those situations where I remember specifically with Royce that I just said to Fred, we need to put Royce in front of Tom Hill. And if Tom Hill gives him his blessing, then I'll support it. Because Tom Hill was in a position professionally over student affairs and student organizations. But Tom also had a really good ability to assess those kind of situations and really drill down to find out if the young man was sincere about a second chance or if it was just, you know, saying what they need to say. And mm-hmm. And so having Tom be able to meet with Chris Allen and Chris Babb and Anthony Booker, you know, was really good in that process.
Pollard's comments about Tom Hill, Iowa State's former vice president of student affairs, are quite interesting. And if you guys are wondering, Tom Hill, did you ever go to Destination Iowa State back before your freshman year? He's the guy who would be in Hilton Coliseum helping you memorize the fight song before your first day of class. Great guy. That's who is meeting with these transfers. It's also one thing that most casual observers of Iowa State basketball often never quite understood. That was the in-depth vetting process that these transfers went through before stepping onto campus. In fact, Hoiberg himself says that the program turned away transfers early on.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we didn't just say, all right, he's on the mark, we're taking him. We would bring them in and have very in-depth conversations. They would meet with the administration. You know, in certain cases, they would meet with the dean of students. We always talked to people that had played a big part in their lives, you know, whether it was a coach that they had in high school or AAU, and we always talked to coaches of the previous institution that the players had been at. So, yeah, it was, we did our due diligence on these kids, and, you know, believe it or not, we actually did turn some down. And, you know, but the thing about it was we felt comfortable. Jamie Pollard felt comfortable. And if we all felt good about it, then we went ahead and pulled the trigger, you know. But if we didn't feel that it was the right fit, or if we didn't feel like they would be what we needed, you know, at Iowa State, we didn't take them. So, you know, we just didn't say, okay, he's available, it's a done deal. We did our due diligence and obviously put in a lot of work on it.
You know, I think Fred dealt with those type of situations really well because of his experience from the NBA, where, you know, everybody's a prima donna, but not everybody gets to be LeBron, right? And Fred was different than most college coaches, and somewhat of a kind of a, you know, was on the frontier of Transferville.
Absolutely.
When he came in and started doing that. And I think his experience in the NBA of just being able to deal with multiple big personalities from his experience in the front office and as a player really paid dividends. This kind of goes back to the vetting process, but it also goes back to just Fred is, you know, we didn't have a lot of people questioning us about it, where, you know, I tell the story of, you know, the little old ladies that loved Fred. If it was a different coach, they may have said, oh gosh, you can't take these transfers, you know, because they're going to be problems. But the little old ladies loved Fred so much that, you know, I used to say, they would say, well, by golly, if Fred thinks they deserve a second chance, then they deserve a second chance. And so Fred got the benefit of the doubt, which avoided having some problems where, you know, people kind of want to come at you because you're taking them.
Yeah, that definitely,
you know,
makes sense.
People gave Fred more of a, you know, gave him a longer leash.
Early on in the Hoiberg years, Fred noted constantly, he said it all the time, that he wanted to take after all those great coaches from his playing days. His teams, indeed, ended up playing a lot like those up-tempo Johnny Orr rosters. But he recruited like Tim Floyd. Hoiberg originally vowed to recruit a mix of high school prospects, junior college players, and transfers, just like Floyd did at Iowa State, who, ironically, also left Ames to eventually become the head coach of the NBA's Chicago Bulls. Regarding those transfers, Hoiberg always had planned on using some of them as a way to rebuild the program in a quick manner. However, taking five in your first 4 months on the job, that was never really the plan. Hoiberg recalls how it all began.
I guess with the way that we approached it is, you know, Chris Babb became available, and I remember TJ coming into my office and saying, you know, we got a kid that we watched in high school. He's got a great body. He's a guy that defends. He can knock down the three. Said he's leaving Penn State, and I think we really need to pursue him. And I said, well, sure, absolutely. And, you know, we had him in for a visit. Wonderful kid, said all the right things. And, you know, he ended up committing to us after looking at some other programs as well. Then the next thing you know, he comes in, well, Anthony Booker's available. You know, this kid from Southern Illinois, he's built like a Greek god. He's, you know, an unbelievable athlete. I think he'll fit our fast-paced system. Yeah, you bring him in for a visit, and we ended up getting him. And then we get Royce, and then, you know, then Chris Allen is available. Just, we didn't have the plan of, all right, we're going to build this thing with four or five transfers, however many we can get. It's just these guys kept coming on the board, and we just you know, at that time did not have really a recruiting class that year because we just obviously gotten the job. So, you know, it just kind of worked out that way. I didn't have the, you know, the vision that, okay, we're taking only transfers here this first year. But then, you know, as we kept getting them, it just, you know, became pretty apparent that, all right, if we want to get this thing to a point where we're competing with Kansas and we're competing with Texas and competing with the top programs in the conference and in the country, this is probably the fastest way to do it. And, you know, once we got things, again, turned around and we started recruiting the four-year guys and still sprinkling in transfers along the way, it became a pretty successful model. And, you know, again, I do think that other teams did. In fact, I've talked to teams that talked about how, you know, I saw Eric Musselman came out and said that they looked at our model and how we did it. And, you know, it's part of how they've gotten some talent at University of Nevada. And, you know, I have seen teams talk about it. I've talked to coaches that I've seen when I'm out the road and, or, you know, I still have friends that I talk to that are going the transfer out now. So, you know, I don't know if say we're pioneers at it, but, you know, it was something that did jumpstart the program for sure.
Hoiberg's recruiting efforts officially got underway on May 19th of 2010 with the signing of the first transfer of the Hoiberg era, a good-looking 6'3" guard named Chris Babb out of Penn State. Babb was a proven three-point shooter in the Big Ten, and he would eventually grow into being a great defender during his time at Iowa State. He averaged 9.3 points per game that season before in Happy Valley. He was really becoming his own player, realizing who and what he could be. Knocked down 82% of his free throws as a sophomore. So after that breakout sophomore season at Penn State, why would Babb transfer to the middle of America to play for an inexperienced basketball coach like Hoiberg during the most important years of his career?
I mean, to me, I think that Fred was just such a genuine person. You know, and in college basketball, you don't really have that kind of transparency, and, you know, you just don't feel that real just genuine love from people. And, you know, when you're a young kid, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, you want to feel that comfort and, you know, you want to feel that just somebody you can trust and somebody you can rely on, somebody that you're going to be spending the next couple of years with. And, you know, that was pretty apparent from him from the beginning. You know, it's something kind of hard to describe, but, you know, it's just something, the feeling that you have. And, you know, to feel that over the phone and, you know, to have that same feeling when you sit down and speak with him in person, you know, and just him being somebody who obviously played at Iowa State and had such a passion for Cyclone basketball and Iowa State University, you know, that's something hard to turn down. And, I mean, it was really awesome, man. The crazy part was I went there during the summer on my visit and literally nobody was on campus. There was, I think, three or four returning players, and I didn't even have a host on my visit with a player because everybody was gone. And so, you know, but, you know, just my trust in Fred and TJ and, you know, all that just kind of paid off.
Following Babb and committing just 2 days later was a guy who is often forgotten about these days. His name was Jake Anderson, also known as Darian Jake Anderson, a stout 6'2" graduate transfer out of Northern Illinois. Remember, he's 6'2". He went on to average 12.8 points and a team high 7.2 rebounds per game in his one season at Iowa State. He helped serve as a bridge from that Greg McDermott era to the glory years of Fred Hoiberg. Then came Anthony Booker, a lengthy big stretch four out of Southern Illinois. He signed on June 18th. But it was on July 14th when Hoiberg made his first real national splash. On the back of Matt Abdelmassey's recruiting, Iowa State beat out John Calipari in Kentucky to sign former five-star prospect Royce White out of Minnesota. Then on August 24th, Chris Allen, who had just played in the Final Four the season before at Michigan State, capped off that original transfer class. Babb, Hoiberg's first recruit, could sense that the program was onto something.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was kind of the first thing when we all kind of stepped on campus together. It was like, you know, this is some crazy talent right here. You know, it's all guys who, you know, were proven and who had film. You know, it wasn't just like four or five random guys that they put together. These were like, you know, Chris Allen, Corey Lucius, been on Final Four teams, and, you know, like guys like that. Royce, who's he was one of the best players in the country coming out of high school, and, you know, same thing with Booker, and, you know, myself, who was a starter in one of the Power Five conferences. You know, it was like, you know, these guys really were all together on the same team, and all we got to do is figure out how to play together, and we have, you know, one of the most confident and well-liked coaches in college basketball. You know, it was kind of just like, wow, this can be really fun.
Here's what's crazy about that first batch of transfers, and it also serves as proof as to how much things have changed, which we'll talk about significantly in future episodes. Royce White had legal issues prior to arriving to Ames. Nobody ever doubts that. But besides him, none of these original five, and again, that includes Jake Anderson, had ever gotten into legal problems before coming to Iowa State. Yet here we are, still discussing how dangerous they were perceived to be. TJ Otzelberger, Hoiberg's associate head coach at the time, explains the feelings in that era quite well.
I think there was a mindset around that period of time that transfers were damaged goods, or they had baggage, or there were guys that couldn't make it at a place that they were before for whatever reason. And so I think across the coaching ranks, there was certainly a negative stigma to transfers, and there must be a reason that it didn't work at the other place, and it must be their fault. And so I think most people tried to stay away. And, you know, if you look at it, we had those four guys that year. And then before they ever played, we had Corey Lucius and Will Clyburn coming in that following year. And similarly, I mean, both of those guys had 1 year to sit and 1 year to play, but felt like, okay, well, you know, Chris Allen was in that same boat. And, you know, as we were trying to put together a more veteran team, just felt like that was something that we needed to do. Now, I think as that, you know, whether you want to call it an experiment or that piecing together that team and those guys went well, I think other people definitely took note of it, and it started to change, I think, across the country. And, you know, when you have a guy like Royce White who, you know, sits 1 year and then plays for one season and ends up being the 16th pick of the draft, and then a guy like Chris Babb who ends up making it, you know, in the NBA for a period of time. A guy like Will Clyburn, who's maybe the top or one of the top few players in all of Europe. Now it starts to, you know, certainly at Iowa State transcend what guys believe they can do if they go there as a transfer, because it's a proven model. But then also across the country where other coaches see the success and want to try to follow suit.
The players heard the noise. It was hard not to. Babb says that it began before they had even stepped on campus.
I started to read the reports, and, you know, once probably three or four of us signed, and it was like, you know, transfer you, you know, and everyone was talking about, you know, jailhouse, and everything negative that could come with transfers. And, you know, I was just kind of like, oh, shit, is that something that, you know, isn't supposed to happen? You know, we're just guys looking for, you know, a great place to finish our college careers. And, you know, I don't think any of us really thought anything negative until, you know, I feel like a lot of the news reports came out, and, you know, read it was on Twitter, and, you know, the kind of the news reports kind of made it seem that way.
Matt Abdelmassey, a man who has essentially made a career out of recruiting transfers, definitely heard the noise on and off of the recruiting trail.
Looking back now, do you remember, you used the word, I think, unorthodox.
Yeah.
Did you get flack on the recruiting trail? I mean, for the way you guys were kind of doing things, it was so different.
We got crushed. We got crushed. I mean, I know you brought up some media guys that maybe you'll be talking to, but those media guys crushed. I mean, I feel like everyone crushed us. Media guys, recruiting people. When it came to recruiting freshmen, there wasn't negative recruiting against us. You know, the freshmen that we were dealing with so early on in Fred's run at Iowa State were more so under the radar type kids, not necessarily the highly ranked ones. You know, you got to remember, I mean, TJ did an incredible job securing the commitments of Melvin and Naz Long and those guys early on. But, you know, then like when George came along. Those were, George was under the radar when he committed to Iowa State.
Yeah,
then he blew up, you know, and everyone was worried that he would decommit and go somewhere else. And, you know, he stayed loyal to his commitment and clearly paid off for him and everybody. But, with the negativity from a national landscape, because, you know, listen, me and I know I would be the first to admit, and I know Fred would clearly back me up, and we definitely took some risks, you know, and that was when we would have to close the door and have a real conversation. Is the risk worth the reward? And certainly the one thing that we always acknowledged with the kids that we took was, are they kids that really genuinely want to do good for themselves? And are they, at the core of them, good kids? And, you know, we answered those questions and we made the decisions we made. And listen, every risk did pay off. There really wasn't one that didn't. So we definitely, the negativity was extremely intense. I felt like every kid we took, there was some type of backlash nationally. And, you know, we ended up starting to gain the reputation while we were there at Iowa State that it was the destination for the island of misfit toys. That's what I called our guys.
Here's more from ESPN's Jeff Goodman and what he thought at the time.
You know, it was a combination, I think. I mean, the four, refresh my memory on who the first four were.
It was
so many.
Royce White, Chris Babb, Anthony Booker, and Chris Allen were the guys.
Yeah, so Chris Allen didn't work out at Michigan State. Obviously, everybody knows with Royce White, there was all that stuff at Minnesota. You know, Booker and Babb were a little bit lower profile. So, you know, I just felt like, again, if Chris Allen wasn't going to work out for Tom Izzo, was he really going to work out for Fred Hoiberg? And I didn't know Fred Hoiberg's kind of style either at that point. Didn't know him well enough. So I didn't know if he could handle guys like that. But, you know, what kind of worked was his personality actually did mesh in a sense that he was more laid back, let the assistants do most of the work, to be honest, other than in practice and in games. And I think that did work because he gave him a little bit more leeway and treated him more, you know, he wasn't as much of a micromanager, which I think worked with a lot of these transfers.
The voice of the Cyclones, John Walters, had a front row seat to all of this. From interviewing the transfers after games to traveling with the team, you attend practices, there isn't much that Walters didn't see.
Completely unfair. And it's interesting that you even bring that question up, because as you called me within the last couple of days to say you wanted to do this interview, I got to thinking about that, and it was something that I always felt at the time. But, you know, you start looking at the list of guys that transferred into the Iowa State program. How many of those guys caused any ripples at all? They didn't cause any problems. I mean, maybe a minor thing here or there, but nothing out of the ordinary. And you're talking about, you know, 11 or 12 guys that represented Iowa State very, very well. And, you know, I think at the time there was this stigma around transfers where, well, if a guy's transferring, there must be some baggage. There's got to be baggage there. There's got to be something wrong with the guy. Well, then people started realizing, hey, maybe this guy was just ready for a change of scenery and wanting to win more or play in a system that fit his style better. Doesn't mean he's a bad person by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, we saw good people transfer out of Iowa State's program through the years, too. Doesn't mean they were bad people when they left. You know, I think that stigma has been erased as more and more programs nationally have gone the route of taking some transfers. It's so much more commonplace now, but Fred really was kind of at the forefront of it, of taking guys. And I think one thing that does happen when guys come in, they know that clock's ticking. They know that they've got to make the most of that opportunity. And I think that really helps them put the foot to the gas and make sure that they stay on a straight, narrow path and succeed in that short window that they had at Iowa State. And I think most of those guys, if you look at that list, were very, very successful in doing that. And so I always thought that was extremely unfair. I mean, Will Clyburn's a tremendous guy. Chris Babb, outstanding person. I mean, when did Abdel Nader ever cause any problems for anybody? You know, I mean, DeAndre Kane came in and did great things. Deontay Burton came in and did great things. You know, I thought it was very unfair at the time, and thankfully, I think that narrative has kind of changed through the years nationally with the stigma attached to transferring.
Through it all, Hoiberg stayed positive with those four original sit-out transfers. To him, this was all about second chances. And in their case, last chances.
You know, these kids get labeled, so early. And, you know, for us, it was, you know, to be able to bring in these guys. And, you know, really the thing I talked to all of them about was, you know, it's a fresh start and it's an opportunity for them to come in and reestablish themselves. And some of them left because they didn't fit with their universities, and some of them left for other reasons. And, you know, just the biggest thing was coming in and, you know, giving them a chance. And, you know, but at the same time, they had to adhere to everything that we were trying to do. And they did it, every single one of them. Well, you know, we're unbelievable in coming in and establishing a culture. And, you know, I'll never forget sitting in my office with George Niang, and he'd come on an unofficial visit. He'd also gone to the University of Iowa, and we sat in there in my office, and I just showed him how we played with Royce White. And I think he just kind of fell in love with that, with the system. And he went out and played, and we put him with Royce when they were playing pickup. And, you know, just to see him in the experience and enjoy that, and how we used Royce really as a point forward and really a hybrid type player. You know, George, I think, saw himself fitting very well in that system, and obviously he did. And, you know, that's, again, that's those transfers. Those guys really helped, you know, get the program turned around quickly. And you know, I think once you get, you see, you know, a program like Iowa State on the national map and competing for Big 12 championships, it's easier to recruit and get a kid, you know, at least get in the door. And, you know, obviously if you do your job and do it well, you're going to have a legitimate chance of getting those guys.
You know, Iowa State actually stumbled into something here, and something that Hoiberg and his staff didn't even see coming at the beginning. I remember it well. It was during that initial Hoiberg season. Most fans sat around Hilton Coliseum wishing that those four sit-out guys could just get on the court already. Let's go. But when it came to preparing Iowa State to finally get back in the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2005, Babb, Booker, White, and Allen, those guys having to sit out that year actually served as a blessing in disguise.
When I look back, that first year where we had, you know, Chris Babb and Booker and Royce and Chris Allen, you know, you had four guys that I thought it was very important. If those guys would have all been ready to play, I don't know if we would have had the same success, because we had an opportunity to mold those guys. And again, they were, when we went on the road and they didn't travel, they were home watching the games together, and, you know, they were building that very important chemistry. Then as we, you know, I think that following year we had Corey Lucius and Will Clyburn, and, you know, those guys were able to sit out together. But, you know, if you only have one, I think it's a little bit more difficult. And that's where, when we brought DeAndre in, to be able to get a guy that had that type of experience, you know, we just didn't have much, you know, at the point guard as far as experience is concerned. We had Monte Morris coming as a freshman, and I thought, you know, I think everybody to a man thought it was going to take him at least a year to get his body where it needed to be to compete at the Big 12. But he obviously exceeded everybody's expectations that first year, and midway through the season, I ended up starting him. And, you know, obviously another guy, Matt Thomas, who was a freshman, we started for pretty much half that season as well. But, you know, DeAndre played a very important role that season, you know, with the experience that he had. He'd been through a lot of different situations that not many players in our team have. We had a relatively young team that season, and that's the year George broke his foot in the tournament, you know, and we were playing, I thought, as well as anybody in the country at that time. So, you know, that was tough. But, you know, DeAndre, you know, to make that game-winning layup against North Carolina to get to the Sweet 16, that's something I'll never forget.
Brent Plum joins me now here on CF Chronicles Transfer U, episode number 2, as we wrap this thing up and we start to look ahead to the next episode. Bloom, okay, so we've covered the beginning, how Fred Hoiberg got the job, why Fred Hoiberg got the job, and now we've gotten into the first batch of transfers themselves. What stood out to you from the first two episodes?
It's fun looking back of when this all happened, we didn't know how quickly it would work, because It was still, Fred got hired, there's not many scholarship guys back. you get these guys in, and still it's like, well, Iowa State still had not been to an NCAA tournament since 2005, so the NCAA tournament is still a long shot at this point.
Yeah.
We had no idea what was upcoming. And yet, you know, when Chris Babb signs Anthony Booker, and you're thinking, okay, those are nice pieces. But the tide really turned when, in subsequent months, Royce White and Chris Allen signed, because those were prospects that had done it at a high level.
Yeah, Jake Anderson, Chris Babb, and Anthony Booker were nice pieces. Iowa State and Fred Hoiberg got the nation's attention with Royce White and Chris Allen.
No question, and for a couple of reasons, and not all of them good, because the national perception is, okay, you've got Royce and Chris Allen. Royce White's a top 20 national guy, five-star recruit, great, great talent. And Chris Allen had just played for Tom Izzo, played in the Final Four in 2009. Royce White had picked Iowa State over Kentucky. John Calipari offered Royce White after he, even when he's dismissed from Minnesota. And Kentucky had just come off a 35-win season, had gotten to the Elite Eight with, that was the DeMarcus Cousins, John Wall team that were fantastic. And yet, for whatever reason, Royce picks Iowa State under a guy that hadn't coached at all before. Like, that was odd to people, thinking, what's going on here? But it also gave Iowa State some credibility that, okay, they've got some talent here, but will this work out? Because there's still some question marks of, why are Royce White and Chris Allen picking Iowa State? The last chance motel at that point.
I think Iowa State parlayed that too, and we'll get into more of this in episodes number 3 and 4. Corey Lucius and Will Clyburn coming up.
Right.
Those were more high-profile transfers than they've been in on. And then, you know, arguably, at the time, the greatest grad transfer in the history of college basketball in DeAndre Kane, followed up by Bryce Dijon Jones. Who knows if those guys elect to take that had they not seen players of the caliber of Royce and Chris Allen.
I don't think they do, and that's the thing, is Royce and Chris Allen really got the ball rolling. But also, Corey Lucius and Will Clyburn committed to Iowa State before they had made the NCAA tournament. So they were still taking a big gamble as well. But yet the foundation was starting to be set of, okay, these guys, they've got some talent here. And I don't know if it's going to work or not, but there was a lot of trust in Fred. At this point in the program, everyone's thinking, we get these guys on the same team with the people we have coming in. And, you know, Melvin Edgem turned out to be maybe better than they anticipated, and some guys were coming along. We could have something special here.
Coming up in Episode 3 of CF Chronicles, Transfer U, we are going to examine the legendary scout team from that first year of the Hoiberg era, plus an in-depth look at Royce White. Why was he so successful during his time in Ames, but has had issues elsewhere? What was Hoiberg's secret sauce? There was also that second and third wave of transfers. We got to get to them. The tragedy of Bryce Dijon Jones, and plenty more. That's all coming up in Episode 3 of CF Chronicles, Transfer U. Thanks for listening.
CF Chronicles, Transfer U is the story behind the story of the greatest era in the history of Iowa State basketball. It's how Fred Hoiberg changed the sport of college basketball and the characters behind it. CF Chronicles are brought to you by you, the Cyclone Fanatic patrons. Your monthly donations to Cyclone Fanatic go right back into making our product better for you, the Fanatics. Chris Williams is the executive producer of CF Chronicles. Jared Stansberry was a producer as well. Ross Peterson is the audio editor. Brent Bloom contributed to the research. Music during CF Chronicles Transfer U is courtesy of AudioNautics.com. Various clips in this piece are courtesy of KCCI-TV and WHO-TV.